It's episode 496 of This Is Whole Life. You know we're digging deeper and into every message here at Whole Life. In 2025, the year of overflow is almost flowed all over the place for the last time. That's it. The countdown is on. We're going to wrap it up. And episode 500 is right behind it. So we got three more weeks to get this overflow all done flowing and mopped up and put back wherever it came from. And then four more until episode 500. Four. So the only thing our conversation can lack around here is you. So whether you're on our online chat on Saturday during or after the service, you can email at podcast@wholelife.church or voicemail at text 407-965-1607. Please let us know your thoughts and opinions, because we'd love to feature them here on the show. So, as always, joining me to my left across the table is Melanie Bachman, who's back after, where were you?
I was in Virginia.
Virginia. And what did it do while you were in Virginia?
It snowed.
It snowed. Come on. How lucky can a Floridian be that the one couple of days you take to go somewhere vertical north and then you end up in snow?
That's right. I did. Nice. Completely unprepared, but I was.
Well, that's usually the way we are here in Florida. To my right, Ken Wetmore, lead pastor here at the church. Lucas.
Now, wait a minute. Left. Melanie, you were gone this last weekend?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Ken hardly noticed.
No.
Wow, I guess Nate did a really, really good job.
Nate was fantastic. This is my way of saying thank you, Nate. Great job. Yes, and well done preparing everybody for your... for being gone. I thought we moved past you being gone a little bit too quickly, because what were you doing?
I was at a conference. I was at the Academy of Homiletics conference.
Where she is an officer of the Academy of Homiletics. This is a big deal.
Executive committee. Yeah.
Oh. Yes. This is a big deal.
I'm not an executive what?
It actually means that I get to hang out with really cool people, and I also have a lot of extra work to do, so.
Oh, the first part sounded fun. Yeah. I don't know about
something. Well, the first part makes up for the second part.
Oh, does it? Truthfully?
Truthfully.
All right. Well, she looks like she's telling the truth. I think we'll stick with that. To my right, as always, is Ken Wetmore, lead pastor here at Whole Life Church. To my left is my partner in crime in the communication department, Lucas. I'm Randy, and here we are. This message is part of a three-message series called Overflowing Gifts, and this one's entitled Prophecy. So, of course, we're going to be talking about Daniel, Revelation. Get your Bibles out, and we're going to have monsters and dragons and things that go bump in the night really, really soon, so stick around for that. If you want to hear the message that it's based on, and you can find out all those cool places to find the things we're going to talk about, episode 288, Overflowing Gifts and Same Thing Prophecy, you'll find that in today's show notes. So, that is where we're going, prophecy. I'm a little scared. I'm a little nervous. But I think we're going to get through it. And I know that it's scary because we have three emails that we'd like to start the show with. Ken, I'm going to let you go first because you're the guy bringing
so
prophecy.
We're starting. We're just going straight. We're not even talking about what the message was about. We're just jumping right into questions.
I already did. It's dragons. It's monsters. It's fire. It's hell. It's Daniel, Revelation.
Man, I guess Randy needs to watch that sermon.
I guess I wasn't the only one that wasn't there. You weren't the only one, Melanie. I guess I wasn't there for it either.
Oh, that's not what it was about?
No.
Well, then let's hit the question and see what it was about. This is based on it, right?
A little bit.
And then Ken can correct me as we go through the rest of it.
So I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say the name of the person who sent this or not, but it was a good comment, and I thought it was an interesting discussion maybe.
Okay.
Said, hi, Ken, thinking about the sermon again. When I was in some Bible studies, the speaker used Hebrews 1:1-4 to dispute the need for modern prophets, contrasting former times of God speaking through prophets with the last days he's spoken through his son. So they were like, so what about it? Because Hebrews, if you're not familiar with what they're talking about, Hebrews 1 says long ago, God spoke many times in many ways to our ancestors through the prophets, and now in these final days, he has spoken to us through his Son. God promised everything to the Son as an inheritance, and through the Son, he created the universe. The Son radiates his own glory and expresses the very character of God, and he sustains everything by the mighty power of his command. When he cleansed us from sins, he sat down in the place of honor at the right hand of the majestic God in heaven. So anyway, the point is, the writer of Hebrews basically says, long ago, God spoke through prophets, and now in these final days, God has spoken to us through his Son, And it sounds like the person who is attending this Bible study, the person leading it, was saying, so that's why there's not a need for modern prophets. We have Jesus. We don't need any prophets anymore.
All right. So that Hebrews is from how long ago?
I mean, depends on who's dating it when, but I mean, I would say
probably a couple thousand years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ish.
Different than Hebrews like 10 minutes ago.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right.
Good coffee at the table is all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's really interesting though, because Paul is the one that talked about, you know, the different spiritual gifts and the gift of prophecy, but Paul did not write the book of Hebrews, I do not think. So
people have
different ideas.
People have tried to say that he did, but it doesn't really bear up to what
doesn't it's sound not, like him.
No,
it's not his style.
I not mean, generally.
But could he write about something different than he would typically talk about and then still be like, oh, well, that was Paul.
Well, you could, except that, you know, I mean, everybody has a different writing style and a different voice and uses, a similar vocabulary. I'm not going to write a different book and suddenly change my entire vocabulary and my entire sentence structure.
Well, that was true until AI came along. Now we'll all have the...
Well, now we will never know.
Write this in the style of Paul.
Yeah, there you go.
Second Gemini 4-7.
Yeah, there it is.
Second Gemini.
So I thought it was interesting. I think, though, that the thing I would, you know, if I were in the Bible study, I think one of the fun discussion points would have been, okay, so then why does Paul say that there are going to be people with the gift of prophecy? Why is that pretty common throughout the New Testament? And the Bible actually identifies New Testament prophets as well after Christ has been here. So,
well, and Joel also says, you know, in the last days, your sons and daughters will prophesy.
Right.
So.
Well, so it's an interesting thing. I think what we probably ought to say is Christ is the supreme voice of God speaking to us. I don't think that means that there isn't, that God doesn't still use prophecy to speak to us. And I think going to what the point of the sermon really was is that while a lot of us like to, a lot of us have grown up in a context where when we think of prophecy, we kind of think of Nostradamus or we think of, foretelling the future. Daniel, Revelation, that sort of thing. And that is prophecy, but there's a lot of prophecy in the Bible besides Daniel and Revelation. And getting into the sermon, what we really look at prophecy, its main point is not to predict the future, but to actually encourage, strengthen, and provide comfort to people. And that is the main point. It's not to be like, oh, it's like, you know, like I think in my sermon, I said, it's not like some, you know, mystery room that you have to try to solve all the puzzles so that you can win something. It's there to strengthen, encourage, and comfort. What that means is that each one of us today can have that prophetic gift that Paul talks about in the sense that we can speak encouraging words to others. We can strengthen others. We can comfort others. And that may be the voice of God speaking to other people. And this next week, my sermon is going to be on presence, being present in people's lives. And Christ lived 2,000 years ago. And it's easy to think, oh, how lucky are they that Christ was there with them. But now Jesus said that his spirit is in all of us. He lives in all of us. And so we are all these little living, those of us who accept Christ have Christ living in us, and we're all speaking on his behalf. And so in that sense, there's that gift, that prophetic gift that, again, is used to strengthen, encourage, and comfort the church and people, and not just the church, but the world, the people that are in desperate need of hearing about the love of God and how God cares for them and how their life can be a better thing with God in it.
Mm. Yeah. Almost seems like Hebrews is almost like a foretelling to take what Jesus says, like ultimately, like you said, this is where be prepared because this is what you're going to want to remember. This is what you're going to want to base things off of. So maybe that's.
I like that the translation said in previous times, God spoke through his prophets. And in these last, it doesn't say now. It does. It's not, it's not like no longer. It's and. And I think you can add another and on there that God also continues to speak through people who are willing to be used by God.
Yeah. Really interesting, though.
Yeah.
Question.
Yep.
Well, our second email, I mean, let's just, we'll just go through. We got three total, so it's one down, two to go. I understand the many scriptural texts prophesying the birth of Jesus, and more of them give a specific time when these things would happen. Yet the Magi somehow knew a pretty specific time frame. We also are left no doubt as to the specific day on which Jesus arose from the dead. It seems to me that in light of all of this, that the anniversary of Jesus' birth has been given an arbitrarily important significance while his resurrection is more or less pushed aside. Why does the SDA Church focus so much on Christmas set together with a pagan holiday? I have no idea. So this is where Lucas and I are looking at the other side of the
table. I'm still questioning the premise a little bit. Like, I think that we do focus on the resurrection and the birth.
Okay.
So I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that was what I was trying to kind of
put a
kind of process through the question. Can you read it one more time?
Yeah. I understand the many scriptural texts prophesying the birth of Jesus, and none of them give a specific time when these things would happen. Yet the Magi somehow knew a pretty specific time frame. We also are left no doubt as to the specific day on which Jesus arose from the dead. It seems to me that in light of all this, that the anniversary of Jesus' birth has been given an arbitrarily important significance, while his resurrection is more or less pushed aside. Why does the SDA Church focus so much on Christmas set together with a pagan holiday?
Okay. I would say that when you use the Seventh-day Adventist Church, that's a pretty broad stroke. There are parts of the Seventh-day Adventist Church that very much I have been around and been a part of that do not celebrate Christmas, don't really celebrate that, and also don't really celebrate Easter. I think that part of the premise that one is not a pagan holiday misses that Easter really is kind of around a pagan holiday as well. You're correct that we kind of have a better idea of when Jesus was raised from the dead because we know when Passover generally occurs on the Jewish calendar. So that's true. But I guess what I've never had a problem with, and just speaking for myself, is I've never had a problem celebrating the fact that Jesus came to earth. The fact that I don't know the exact date, I've heard about people who are adopted and for whatever reason, they don't know the date that they were born on and their family picks a date that they choose to be their birthday so that they can celebrate, even though they don't know for sure. And I don't think that changes the point of the birthday. The point of the birthday is to celebrate that person's life and their being here and living another year. And for me, I'd say the same thing is true with Christmas, that to celebrate Christ's birth, God coming to earth, God with us, for me is a beautiful thing. And while we may not know the precise date, which by the way, my wife has a fascinating theory on when Christ's actual birthday was, is that she theorizes that it was when we celebrate Halloween, because she thinks before. She feels like Satan wanted to corrupt that day. And because that's her theory. And I don't, there's no, nothing scientific about it other than, you know,
I thought I'd read somewhere before that there were things that there were in October that maybe,
there are people who, there are theories on all kinds of places, you know, based on when the shepherds were out and watching over their flocks and things like that. But again, back to the point, I would say that for me, Easter and Christmas here at Whole Life, we celebrate both. And I would say, it feels to me like we celebrate them pretty equally here at Whole Life, that we kind of go all in on both of them based on our attendance. Those are our two most attended Sabbaths of the year. And if I'm correct, I think that Easter may actually edge Christmas out slightly on attendance. I can't remember. We were just looking up this recently. Somebody asked, I had a pastor in another denomination who was kind of curious which one
was more attended.
They were saying, this is how it is in our denomination. How is it in yours? And so I was like, I'm not sure if I know that they're both one of our two largest attended Sabbaths here at Whole Life, but let me see. And it was, I think it was one person more.
Yeah, really, really close.
It was really close.
Although I do have to say we decorate more for Christmas than
we
do for Easter. So
yeah,
that's true.
But do you know what, so do you know, remember what our number, which one was, it was pretty close.
Oh yeah.
Neck and neck.
I felt like Easter was by one.
And what was theirs? Was
I think that theirs was more of Christmas. I think that's why I call them saying that Christmas was a more attended one.
Yeah.
Or was it? Or maybe it was Easter. Anyway, we were having a discussion about whether it was more attended because people are out of town for Christmas, whereas at Easter time they're more around because of school year stuff. Anyway, there was a conversation about that. But to the person that's asking, you know, there's been a lot of discussion through the years amongst many Christians and within the Seventh-day Adventist denomination about pagan practices in the Christian church and so on and so forth. You know, if you really want to get down to it, there's a lot of practices in our Western church that we act like are have always been that aren't. The way that we do church in general is not the way the early Christian church did it. The sermons that most people find to be like the main aspect of a church service, and you'll hear about it if it isn't what they think, that really would not have been a part of probably it wouldn't have been what we do today in the early Christian church.
Yeah.
And a lot of the homiletics are really based more around Greek rhetoric than they are around probably the way that Jesus spoke. And all you have, if you want to try to prove that to yourself, just read the Sermon on the Mount. It doesn't really follow the same kind of pattern that you would kind of intro, point one, point two, point three, summary, the end, which is a very, very basic structure for speaking. So to all that, I think the point is, who are you trying to worship? Who are you trying to spend time with? And for me, when Christmas rolls around, I can assure you, I am not interested in worshiping a tree. I am not, for me, I'd be just as happy not setting up a tree.
I love you so much.
Yes. But I also recognize that there is something that's special about family and togetherness and some of the memories that come along with some of these symbols that we have in our Christmas, our way of doing Christmas. And so, I think this for me is a yes and.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do both.
There's a lot of churches. I mean, growing up, we never once celebrated Easter as anything out of the norm. It was just, maybe the message was based around the resurrection, but it wasn't intentional like we do here. Until we got to Florida, that was just like, only Sunday worshiping churches do Easter. We don't do that. That's pagan. So that was new for us as a.
Yeah, that is probably the more common.
Yeah.
Which is a little strange because
it is.
It coincides with Passover, so.
Yeah.
So
the writer's correct about, very, very correct about that. We have a lot more evidence for when Easter would be.
Sure.
But then Easter is also based off of the pagan fertility festivals and things like that, so.
Cool. All right, we got one more. This is from Anonymous. When considering the context of many verses cited in the New Testament as prophecies of Jesus, it's apparent that these verses were not originally written for that purpose. Therefore, New Testament writers repurposed Old Testament prophecies for their times, and this was an acceptable practice in Jewish theology. Even today, preachers cite verses and may use them to make a point that was not the original intent of the text. What caution would you suggest when this is done today to avoid simply proof texting a point that may not be beneficial?
What a great question. I was wondering if somebody would actually come back with that, because a lot of the verses that I quoted in the sermon, if you go back to their original context and you sit down with a rabbi rather than a Protestant pastor or a Catholic priest, you sit down with a rabbi, the rabbi will quickly take you to task for trying to say that these verses have anything to do with the Messiah, much less Jesus. And so, you know, for unto us a child is born. That one, which is one of my favorites, they're going to say, oh, no. That has something that's more to do with an actual person who is born. The word virgin, that a son will be born to a virgin, that's a poor translation of what's really being said. It really is better translated as a young woman rather than.
Yeah, when they translate it into the Septuagint, that's where that change took place from maiden to virgin. And then the gospel writers picked up on that, the Septuagint version. So that's how we got it in the New Testament.
From what to what? Sorry?
From the original Hebrew into the Greek translation, right, which is called the Septuagint. That's when
what was the original word or meaning?
Young maiden, young woman.
Oh, yeah. Maiden. Yeah, maiden. Yeah. I didn't catch that. Oh, sorry. So maiden to, so they went from maiden and interpreted that to virgin.
And it's not impossible to translate it as somebody who hasn't had sexual relations, but it's not really necessarily, it isn't exclusively that either. If we use the word virgin, that's what it means. It means somebody who hasn't had sexual relations. The word in the original Hebrew that's used can mean that, but it also can mean just a young woman of a younger age. And so when my rabbi friends and I have these discussions, they're like, you know, if you really care about context, Ken, then.
But then you take the text that you also mentioned, which I don't think I wrote. I wrote down, you had like 16 of them just because I thought they were interesting. Yeah. And I'm going to have to go back to and look at the rest of them like you asked. But where, you know, Gabriel goes to her and lets her know that she's going to, you know, have a son of the Holy Spirit. I mean, then that kind of corroborates, doesn't it?
Well,
but
that's how Christians, because the gospel writers quote the Old Testament, we as Christians say that's what the Old Testament meant by that, because Matthew says, look, a virgin shall conceive. Therefore, this has been fulfilled. Jesus fulfills this, because one of the things that you'll notice is most of the Bible verses I quoted really come out of the book of Matthew. Luke does a couple, like two or three, but Matthew is like, there's a whole like 14, because Matthew is obsessed with proving to his Jewish audience that Jesus is the Messiah that was prophesied in the Old Testament scriptures. And so he goes out of his way to use those Old Testament scriptures and say, hey, look, that's Jesus, the fulfillment of this. Jesus is the fulfillment of that. Jesus fulfilled this. And he points back to all these verses that his readers would have been familiar with. And I think what is even more interesting about that to think about, because when you say that he's quoting them out of context, but Matthew would have had to have known that he was quoting to people who are very, very familiar with what the Old Testament context would have been and what it was if he was going to a Jewish audience, which almost all theologians will tell you that the book of Matthew is written to Jewish people. And
so he would have known that original meeting and knew that you knew what he was talking
about.
And
so it'd be like kind of me saying that taking a New Testament, like for God so loved the world, and then try and saying to you, and what he means by that is he really means Saturn. And you'd be like, no, I'm pretty sure it's this world. You know what I'm saying? That may be not the best metaphor, but it's basically you take something that's very common, very well known to people and say it means this. Well, if they would have to agree with you that it potentially could do that if you want it to be convincing.
No, I kind of feel like Matthew had to be counting on the fact that maybe his audience was vaguely familiar with the context, but not super familiar. Because even, you know, the out of Egypt, I called my son. Yeah. If you look that at the original, it goes on to talk about how the son was disobedient, which of course doesn't really apply. So I feel like he kind of, maybe there are some things that might have been vaguely familiar, but if people weren't super familiar, it could have passed.
They would have still known what he was talking
about. Well, Melanie, I know you probably studied this as much as anybody in this room. So what is the Christian argument on that then? Did it was like, that Matthew just was able to say, well, this particular portion of that prophecy applied. The rest of it was, it's like a secondary prophecy or something. It's like there is one prophecy for this, and then this is the second fulfillment.
So I can't speak for Christianity as a whole.
Yes, you can.
I can count it myself. I think that Matthew was trying really, really, really hard and was probably didn't get a great grade in his exegesis class. Neither did Paul. But
ouch.
Well, but that was actually
Professor Bachman is like D.
Now, I'm trying to go back. I read a book a while ago that said that was actually pretty common, though. It was a common practice in that time to take a Bible verse and just use it for what you wanted it.
So not much has changed.
I was going to say, how is that different than today? What happened?
But to kind of repurpose it a little bit. And so what's the answer to that? I think the answer is with humility to approach Scripture. And I think in general, it is best to come at Scripture with what the original is. But I also think that just because something was written to people 2,000 years ago does not mean that you can't take that verse and apply it to what's happening today. And to say it might not have exactly meant that for them, but maybe God intended it to now mean this for us. But I think you have to do that with a whole lot of humility and openness to being wrong and being sure to ask God's spirit to be speaking through you and to you.
All right. So if you haven't guessed by now, there's no Revelation. There's no Daniel. There's no scary stuff. There's no dragons breathing fire.
I'm sorry. I ruined that for you, didn't I? So,
yeah.
You just go edit it out.
I was just thinking to myself, you know, when you were like, ooh, prophecies. And I'm like,
you sound more disappointed than scared.
Yeah. I mean, I think the good parts, I mean, this is not how I have ever been told to even consider prophecy in this manner. Growing up, like Ken said, it was always scary stuff. It was always, well, you know where you're headed. You're headed to one of two books, and there's beasts, there's horns, there's angels, there's all kinds of things and people stomping on other people's heads. It's just mayhem, mass hysteria. So it's that's what I was expecting. And then he's all like, oh, you know, strengthens, encouragement, and comforts. Doesn't that sound fun? Doesn't that sound nice and encouraging?
Sorry. We lost Ken.
We accidentally lost Ken on the podcast here, guys. We'll get him right back. But while Ken's
you okay?
That drink of water was a tough one.
No water during podcast.
That's it. But the other part that he started off with that I wanted to make sure that we asked everyone, and this would be something I would encourage you to join the Slack channel or just send us a text or an email. What's the best gift that you would have never guessed would be good? Ken talked about the boots, you know, how you get the Tic Tacs, but you're looking for the fire engine. I feel all of that. So Lucas, what's the best gift you've been given that you'd have never guessed would be good? When you unwrapped it at Christmas, you're like, oh man, this, I don't know.
Man, it's kind of tough. I need to think about it.
Melanie, you got one?
I do, but it probably doesn't relate exactly like you're thinking. Because when I was expecting my first child, I told God, look, let's talk about this. I think I can handle girls. I don't think I can handle boys.
Oh, no.
And apparently God laughed, gave me two sons and two stepsons for a total of four sons. But then I realized that I actually love being a boy mom.
Yeah.
Nobody ever borrowed my shoes or tried to use my shampoo. And I actually do enjoy monster truck shows. So it all kind of worked out. Basketball games, football games.
What kind of shampoo do you use?
The good stuff.
The good stuff. Me too. I was just wondering if we were using the same because I like a good shampoo. So if I come over and your shampoo's missing, I mean, saying. Okay.
Cool. Well, if you want to smell fruity.
If my hair smells fruity, like, I'm okay with that.
I don't know. Like, what does it smell like? Like some kind of fruit.
Should we all take a moment and smell her hair?
Well, maybe not.
Okay. Maybe that's too weird.
I mean, we're friends. I don't think we're that close.
Well, we'll find out after the show. No, tune in next week to find
out. To see you as a job still.
Find out what Melanie's hair smells like. I was thinking about it in probably the gift that I've used more than I ever thought I would. And I was like, oh. You're giving me a Bible. Yay. And that's just, but like for Christmas, you don't expect you're going to get a Bible, right? But it was the Message Bible. And that was probably of any actual physical, not I'm talking about app or digital, but of any physical actual Bible in book format, it's the one I've read the most, absolutely without even by a long shot. And I was like, huh, there you go. Who would have thought? And Ken, what kind of boots were those? These magical boots that you got?
Man, I don't even remember the brand. They were so comfortable.
I mean, like, do they still make them? I mean,
I thought about walking around them in the summer. They were that comfortable. They were like, they're nice and padded. They had good grip on them. They were
like Gore-Tex?
Fur-lined. No, they're kind of like a leather-like boot. It was like more of a fancy, like, you could wear them to church in Spokane, kind of. They were that nice for a little while. And then they're nice.
All right. You got one?
Well, I always felt that my gifts matched the expectation of what I wanted them to be. Okay. But once I got a fishing rod, and I wasn't super, you know, excited about it, but then it became a very nice.
You fish?
My uncle did. So he gave it to me and then he took me fishing. And
Okay.
It was nice.
So really the relationship with your uncle is what made the fishing pole special,
yes.
Maybe.
Yeah. That's it.
That's cool. So it wasn't just a gift. It was the gift of presents. Right, Ken?
Presents.
I love presents.
There you go.
I can't wait to see what box Ken opens next week on stage. I'm already foreshadowing what's coming. So don't miss that. The Christmas story, you said, overflows with gifts of prophecy. And you said you can only truly appreciate them more the more you wear them. And I was just trying to think of, like, before you said anything, I was thinking, like, what prophecy is there in the Christmas story? Like, because, again, I just don't think growing up or any time I've ever thought about prophecy was like, oh, Christmas prophecy. Yeah, let's read the Christmas story, everyone. And that's never been a part of it. But you know, you're talking about. I really like the escape room. Lots of theories, and you know, but kind of like, you know, who knows for sure. So, what is the goal, or what should it be? I mean, if you just include prophecy like you're talking about. I mean, what is the goal for us to find the prophecy? I mean, I know you said strengthens the ones that strengthens, encourage, and comforts. But how do we, but if you're not looking, like I would have never read the Christmas story and found this to be, or thought of it like, oh, hey, that's prophecy. I mean, there's probably more in the Bible that we've all read through and may or may not have thought about it. So is this something that we should go looking for in other places and then apply the same kind of thing to? Or is it like, nah, this is kind of a particular place that we want to focus?
No, I think what I was hoping is that people will change their paradigm when it comes to what they think about when it comes to prophecy, that people would maybe just take a moment to say, you know, it isn't about trying to figure out the day and the hour of Christ's return or what horrible thing is going to happen, but rather – the whole point of these prophecies is that God knows what's going to happen. When we talk about the future prophecy, the whole point is just to say, hey, God knows what's going to happen ahead of time. He's going to be there with you through it. And if things are really tough, that's okay. God will be with you. He'll see you through. And there is going to be a better day. And so that's one aspect of it. But then there's the other aspect of the strengthening. It's God speaking to you through scripture and saying, hey, is that really the nicest thing to be doing? Is that what's going to make the world a better place? Is that what's going to make your community a stronger place to live in? Is this what's going to build up your marriage? Is this what's going to make you, your kids, give them the opportunity to be the people that they can be? And that's part prophecy too. And that's the part that I want people just to start thinking about is that I think that when we often the way that we frame prophecy, when we go through and we read the gifts of the Spirit, all we think that we can do is the hospitality part of it, maybe a little bit of the discernment stuff. But we kind of chuck prophecy out the window and say, that's just, you know, in our faith, that would be just Ellen White. That's the only person who ever had the gift of prophecy. And I think again, yes, and. Yeah. And do I think that Ellen had a special gift of prayer? I do. But I don't think that means that God doesn't speak through Melanie when she gets up front and delivers a sermon. I don't think that it means that it doesn't speak through some of the other very amazing people out there. And does that mean that they're having visions and that they're, you know, doing all this? Not necessarily, but does it mean that there are times where I just 100% know that God has spoken through me to say something to somebody that they needed to hear because I don't know how I came up with that on that place and that time? I do believe that with my whole heart. And I think we need to open ourselves up to that possibility as well, because if we don't, then it just becomes something that goes on a shelf. And we're not, I think, again, I think we can unconsciously speak on behalf of God, but how much more if we're asking God to do that? How much more if we're saying, hey, when I go out today, help me to speak a prophetic word to somebody today, something that they needed to hear that will strengthen them, that will encourage them, that will give them comfort. Let that be a part of it. You know, the Bible tells us we don't receive because we don't ask sometimes. And I think that we should be asking for these good gifts. And again, the reminder from the very beginning of the sermon is the whole point of these gifts is they're the tools in your toolbox for building love. Because when you look at 1 Corinthians 13, it's the love chapter. It talks about the supremacy of love, how that is the ultimate thing that we're all working towards, that we're wanting to create, this agape love. And then 1 Corinthians 14 talks about the gifts of the Spirit, which are the tools that God uses to create love in this world. And again, can you build a birdhouse without a hammer? Sure you can. Can you use a different tool to do it? But maybe using that hammer is the easier way of doing it. And so that's my point when we start talking about prophecy, when we leave it just to one person or a small group of people and say, well, that's not for everybody, or that's not available. I think we're missing what the Bible is really saying. The Bible is saying this is a gift for the whole church. It is. There are people who have it in greater degree, and there'll be people who have it in lesser degree. But I kind of look at it as like cooking. There are some people who are amazing cooks, but everybody probably needs to be able to make some food to survive. It may not be the best tasting food, but you probably need to be able to make a meal if you want to be able to survive. And so I think the same thing is true when it comes to prophecy, because Paul calls it the greatest of the gifts, the most useful of the gifts.
I think we've taken that phrase spirit of prophecy and applied it so narrowly that we've done ourselves a little bit of a disservice. If we were going to, talk about it in terms of gift, it's kind of like, hey, no, keep pulling the paper out. There's more in the bag. You know, there's good stuff. Why did you just take what was in the very top, you know? So I think that we have narrowed it so much that we just don't even realize that the whole thing was supposed to be broader from the very beginning.
And it's problematic when we start, you use the term spirit of prophecy. Somebody asked me about this a while ago. Why don't you refer to Ellen White as the spirit of prophecy? And so, because it's not biblical. Yeah. Ellen had the spirit of prophecy. She was not the spirit of prophecy. Yeah. The Bible is clear. The Bible says the spirit of prophecy is Jesus. And so did she have that? I believe she did. I believe Jesus lived in her, spoke through her. I believe God gave her that gift. And I think we do her a very great disservice when we start putting that label on her, because that's Jesus.
Yeah.
Is the spirit of prophecy. And that means that you and I can have the spirit of prophecy too. We're not the spirit of prophecy, but we can have the spirit of prophecy in us.
Well, maybe the thing that was most enticing about the idea was you said the encouragement in, I believe in the original language, it was called alongside, I think you said, mm-hmm. alongside.
One called alongside.
Yeah. And you said it involves stimulating faith and urging listeners to persist in a righteous living. And here's the important part, not through shame or blame, but through love and compassion walking alongside. And when you think about, or I shouldn't say when I think about the idea of prophecy and foretelling the future, I don't feel like that's ever, I don't know that anyone's ever done it really well with the walking alongside, with the love and the encouragement and without the shame and maybe some blame. And so part of me thought, well, that's a good enough reason to start thinking about it in this fashion and what ways you can, like you said, ask for a prophetic word or how you would be able to strengthen someone, giving them a better foundation, the encouragement. And then, and both of those, if you're doing that, it's going to bring some comfort, whether that's your, you know, total gift or not. And it just seems like that was a welcome idea when it comes to prophecy for me.
Yeah. And not only that, but, you know, prophecy, the big picture story of prophecy is God wins. Mm, you know, yeah. that is the climax of the whole idea of prophecy. And I think it's probably a lot easier to be in Matthew's situation where you can kind of go back and find things like, this fits this. But the truth is Jesus didn't fulfill all the messianic prophecies. And there were things that people missed because the Messiah was supposed to do this and this and this and this. And so when we try to take prophecy and pin it to specific things that we have expectations for, we might miss it because we're waiting for something that we have determined must take place or must happen, or this person must appear, or these, you know,
determined incorrectly.
Right. We might miss it. So I think that gotcha. That spirit of humility along with it can, you know, and that malleability, that adaptability, I think that the big idea is God wins. You know, take a look around and see what's going on. But ultimately, God wins. That's the comforting part of it.
But that doesn't sound like when we talk about the foretelling type of prophecy. What you just said, I believe you said malleability, humility. Those don't sound like foundational truth. Like I can, you know, put my foot down and go, that's the truth. And so that doesn't seem like that works for prophecy, because prophecy has to be right, doesn't it?
I think that you have to go back to what is truth. And Jesus said, I am the truth. Mm. And I think when you start trying to tie the truth to constructs of the culture and time that you live in, then you start really running some big risks. I think that if you pin truth as Jesus, and it looks like Jesus, and it sounds like Jesus, and it is Jesus, when that's the truth, when it's a person, it's God, God is the truth, then I think it allows you to hold a little bit more loosely to things that should be held loosely to. And a great example of this in the New Testament is circumcision. The Old Testament said that circumcision was an everlasting covenant between God and his people. And along comes Paul and he says, no, it really doesn't matter anymore. Now, that's some hubris. And you would have, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how heretical that would have sounded to Jewish people to say, number one, that Gentiles could become Jewish without having to take on the things that make a person Jewish. And so I think that, again, to the point I heard Melanie making, I think we have to really pay attention to God and be connected with God and to hear what God is trying to say. And I think, again, the question is, when we think about what love looks like as defined in 1 Corinthians 13, is this loving? And I can unequivocally say that for Paul, when he said, no, circumcision is not relevant anymore, and people can become followers of Christ without doing this, it was a loving statement. It was opening the door to make it easier for people to get in rather than making it harder for people to get in. And I wonder how we are doing at making it easier for people to get in. And I know, and it's tricky because the Bible says this is important. Do this, don't do that. But my question for all of us is, what are we doing to come alongside and walk with rather than erecting walls and barriers what are we doing to help people over barriers? What are we doing to help them in their journey as they are attempting to get close to Christ? I think those are just important questions for us to ask ourselves, because I just don't think that God wants to be gatekept, that he wants us to be like the gatekeepers that decide who gets to come to him or not. You don't get to decide whether my kids get access to me or not. That is not your job. Your job is to love my kids and let them know that I love them and to walk with them. And I think that's just a really important thing for us to wrap our minds around. But for millennia, people have wanted to do that. Mm. I get in, you don't.
And that's basically what Paul was wrapping it up. Even if I prophesy, if it's, you know, it's a clanging cymbal, and if I don't have love. Yeah. So many people take the prophecy part and they run with it, and it's got all these sharp edges, and they forget about the love part.
Yeah. So this is, I don't know, maybe just more trivial than anything, but it was interesting to me as we start to wrap up. How many prophecies you mentioned that Jesus fulfilled? You said conservatively maybe 300 plus. And if you took a very liberal view of that, maybe over 500. It seems like a big spot there hanging out in the middle. Is it just because people don't agree on those things?
Yeah, it goes to what Mel and I were talking about earlier, that there are people who will say that he didn't really fulfill that. That's out of context, or that wasn't, you know, I called my son out of Egypt. If you look that one up again, the son that's called out of Egypt is bad. He's sinning. He's doing bad things. And so it depends on whether you want to say, we're just going to take that isolated phrase, I called my son out of Egypt, and say, well, that's a fulfillment right there, because Jesus went to Egypt and it just fulfills this one little aspect of this larger thing that counts. Clearly Matthew thought it counted. So you can go with what you want to there, theologians, there are theologians who argue that Jesus barely fulfilled any.
Wow.
Out there, depending on where they're, you know, what they're, where they're coming from. And then the funny thing is, so when you say a liberal reading would be 500 plus, that would actually be your very conservative theologians that would probably argue that.
Yeah.
And when you say a conservative estimate, you're actually talking about your very liberal theologians that would say funny. That. So anyway, just because I found that kind of amusing as I was thinking about what you said.
stupid question, but is there a resource or a book or a web resource that would kind of take these one by one and maybe the pros and the cons? I mean, I just think it's really interesting that they're – and it's pretty easy to see why people would disagree and when, you know, knowing all what they know. But it would just be interesting to see, like, here's the book of everything Jesus did or didn't do, depending on what you believe, you know, then it's 1,000 pages of.
I can't think of a single source that would cover all. I mean, it may exist.
You had a professor at Vanderbilt who is Jewish, yeah, who's written some books about that, right?
Yeah, A.J. Levine. She's a Jewish person, a practicing Jewish person who is also a New Testament scholar. So she put out an annotated New Testament, the Jewish annotated New Testament. So there are some things in there that are really helpful, because you can read, you know, for example, in the book of Matthew, you know, whatever he is saying, and then look in the notes and see what she says about what Matthew said. So that actually would be a good resource.
So if you're looking for the kind of the other side of the coin that most of us as Christians are very used to seeing.
Yeah.
If you want to read the traditional Christian viewpoint, you can read anything by Ellen White, Desire of Ages. That'll be very much along that will be very orthodox for Christianity. You can read, I think that Tim Keller has written a fair amount that kind of talks about that. The Case for Christ, Lee Strobel spends a lot of time making the Christian case for why Jesus fulfilled the Old Testament prophecies. So Lee Strobel does that in The Case for Christ and The Case for Faith. And then I think there's something else. So you'll see that. But if you're kind of wanting to look at the other side of what's talked about, there's also the resources are out there. You can find them if you want to find them.
Yeah. I'll list a couple of those and just drop links just in case you're interested. Because I just thought it would be interesting to see the other part of it that we don't know.
Yeah.
Swing by my office and I'll show you the Jewish Annotated New Testament. You can look at it for yourself.
Of course you have a copy.
It's
probably
too,
autographed.
Just so you know,
hers is autographed, though.
Yeah,
right?
And she probably got me the copy I have.
Well, next week, we've already talked about this. It's week 2 of Overflowing Gifts. Presents. Ken is bringing presents for everyone.
Everyone.
It's awesome. I love it.
It's the gift of prophecy.
Oh, doggone it. See, that gift you thought, but it's probably going to be that gift you thought you just didn't think.
Randy unwraps a ten-horned beast. Just what I always wanted.
Yes. This is going on my wall in my office right next to my picture of Jesus on a Harley.
I can.
Thank you, Melanie.
I can give you the amazing facts statue of Daniel 2 statue.
Hey, Lucas, you're going to get a statue.
This is a thumb drive. You know what? Have I shown this to you, right, Melanie?
Yes, it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's you know the Daniel 2 statue with the head of gold
and the chest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amazing Facts made a thumb drive out of that.
Yes.
It's phenomenal.
Don't worry, Ken doesn't bow down to it. It's just fine.
No, I
still have my, you know, I could switch with you. I have an Amazing Facts golf shirt. Mine's a
real. He's going to keep his.
I don't care if it's signed.
Doug gave it to me.
Well, I don't care.
Himself.
I'm happy for you, and I wouldn't want to take that away from you.
He doesn't care if Doug wore it first.
Well, maybe he did.
I'm just saying that statue is the coolest thing
I may own.
Very
cool. If your thumb drives, that's pretty good.
Good job to whoever on that team thought that one up.
That's technology.
Phenomenal.
And speaking of presence and technology, sometime this week, between now and Friday, I will converse with Ken and maybe Melanie and Lucas, and we're going to come up with an idea because I have 10 pieces of technology that I'm going to give away for episode 500.
10 pieces of technology.
So there's 10 chances to win.
Shouldn't you be giving away 500 pieces of technology?
That's
for?
I talked to Karen and she turned my budget request down.
Oh. I'll go back to her. We'll talk about this further.
And so there's only 10.
I wonder how expensive making the Daniel 2 statue drives.
Are you using real gold? And
that's right.
I wonder if somebody can reach out to Amazing
Precious
Facts
metals.
And see if they have any leftovers, about 500 of them.
I don't know if I trust the clay and stuff, though, for the feet with you pushing that in. We should invert it. So
you just have to see it. Maybe I'll take a picture of it.
So what I'm going to do in today's Slack channel, guys, I'm going to put a picture of said technology in there so you'll know whether or not what we're going to ask of you to be in the running for one of those 10 will be worth your time and effort. I'm going to say yes, because if not, I will keep one for myself because they're pretty awesome. Anyway, so be looking for that in the Slack channel. Just the easiest way to do it is just send an email to podcast@wholelife.church and say, add me to the Slack channel. But please send that from the email you'd like to be subscribed with. And that way I can just copy that email and put it in the Slack. And within seconds, you will be in for all the extra fun that happens there every so often. So next week it's presents. Melanie, when is and what time and what instructions dost thou give for the Big Christmas program?
Big Christmas program is happening this Saturday at 9:30 and noon.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend coming early.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I would recommend coming to first service.
Oh, that's a better one.
I also recommend parking in the parking garage because we will have somebody with a golf cart that will help transport you to the church.
There will be parking signs, by the way.
That's really good advice, too, by the way. The parking garages right across Orange are always have space. And I totally understand if walking's difficult for you or whatever, please park close. But if for those of us who are able-bodied, man, and who regularly attend Whole Life, if you can park in one of those garages, I always park down at Innovation Tower. It's a little bit of a walk, but man.
Or the Cancer Center. It's an open lot, and it's right across the street. You can usually get pretty close and sneak through the bushes, but don't tell them I told you to go through the bushes.
Yeah, don't do that. Just do it the right way.
Yeah.
But if you can, it just leaves room for guests and people who aren't as ambulatory to get to be parked closer. So that'd be great. And the program, I just found out today, a special surprise I don't think I'm allowed to say out loud, am I?
No, sir.
What?
Let me just tell you something. It's... I was shocked. It's so cool.
It's going to be fun. It will be fun.
Oh, that. Yeah, no, that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one's going to expect it.
No.
No one would expect. You're not going to expect it.
I didn't expect it.
No.
And it was very.
If you come to church next week.
This is why I hire such smart people to work here.
And you say you guessed it.
Yeah. Should we give a hint?
No
hints.
No, Melanie, no.
But we will have the big orchestra, the big choir, and the big, all the things. So it will be a great celebration.
You've never been to Christmas at Whole Life, let me just say that I've been to a lot of cool Christmas programs, right? And there's Christmas programs can take on a ton of different vibes. But like if celebrating Christ's coming and what that means for the second advent, then if celebrating is your thing, then you should really be here because I don't think anyone celebrates quite as well as we do. So how about that?
Although after the children's choir this past weekend, well, I don't know. That's a tough fact.
That's true. Yeah? That's so true.
So darn cute.
That we thought about maybe in future years just having the children's choir every week of December because the parents will be okay with that, right?
Let's check with Phil and Crystal and see if we can.
Does that go in the same bin as me asking them to stay up on the platform the whole time? So
pretty sure.
Oh, well. That is video gold, though.
I think there are child labor laws that we have.
No, we're not paying them. It's okay.
Oh, wow. And on that, that's one of our presents. Just as good as we can be. That's awesome. All right, guys. Man, don't miss the Christmas program. And like you said, come early. Come to first. Fill up first. And then maybe second, everyone has a chance to not hit overflow. That'd be really cool.
And come to second, we're actually doing something fun this year. We are re-debuting worship cafes. I understand prior to me being here, prior to COVID, that we had worship cafes.
Yes, we did.
And we are bringing those back.
Nice.
So that's starting this week and will be actually happening every week after. But those are in rooms 101 and 108. And it's kind of a different church service experience. It's not overflow. It's not necessarily that. What it is it's if you're kind of wanting to have, you know, sit with tables, maybe a hot drink, and maybe even have a little bit of guided conversation about the services that's going on and that sort of thing, then worship cafes are going to be for you. We're going to be kind of developing those over the next year or so into what we think they ought to be, or we're going to experiment with some different things. So if you're interested in trying that out, those are rooms 101, 108. And then the worship center obviously will be open. And when that gets full, we have room 105 that is overflow. And are we opening up 305 upstairs or is that?
No, I think we're keeping people on
the first floor. Cool.
Yeah.
So, but you know what? Just come be here. Even if you're in the PAC service, to me, my favorite services are the ones where the church is just packed and you hear people singing the songs together and the whole place just filled with God's grace.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And if you've never been here, nobody sings like Whole Life Church. I will take that to anywhere I've ever been. And you hit, especially second service, you hit second service when it's packed and, you know, we can outdo the microphones pretty easily.
Yes, it really does. True.
It's a true thing. And when I have friends visit, they're like, I have never been in a church that sings that much or that loud. And it's like, well, there you go. And I've seen some of the things that they're debuting down there in the worship cafes. And it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
It is very nice.
You're going to like it.
Yep.
All right, guys. That's it. Be here this week.
Food drive. Bring some food with you.
That's right.
Food
drive, Angel Tree. I think do we still have time this week for Angel Tree?
This is the last Saturday. Yeah. So bring this lots and lots of, especially canned goods.
And if you don't know what.
How much food did we take to WESH last year for Second Harvest? Do you remember? Was it a ton? Was it less than a ton? I think it was less than a ton, right?
It was more than just my truck.
Yeah.
We took the last of it, which my truck was squatting a little bit.
Did we do two truckfuls?
I think we did. So that was a pretty good.
So we need to do four truckfuls this year, right? We need to. There's more people in need of food right now.
And look at it this way. If you have a golf cart, we can help you get the food from your cart.
Yeah.
So please bring
for
it.
Sure.
Just bring it. We'll worry about getting it to
the
church lobby and we'll bring you and then we'll go back and get the food. We'll leave some there. We'll come back and get the food. So
go to your favorite grocery store, find there, buy one, get one.
Yeah. BOGO the business.
Just go for it.
Yeah. Also, If you don't know what either of those entail that we just talked about, wholelife.church/events, it's always there. And then there's also for the whole month, there are serve opportunities available in, it's all in one calendar. So you go there, look at it, it says opportunities to serve. You click in there. There's like six things that you and your family, you family, friends, whatever, can get together and do that. That's something that we would highly encourage because
yes, indeed,
we're looking for one ourselves. So
that's one of our values here at Whole Life, isn't it?
Participation.
That was
sorry, part Ken.
Of, thank you.
Involvement.
That's involvement. I forgot which one.
We're all in around here, Randy. All
that's
in.
That's right.
All in.
It's almost
not
like
part
was,
way in.
It's almost
in.
Like I was there for all those meetings.
Nice.
Somehow,
see what I did there.
See what you did there.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
Thanks.